Welcome to International Law Talk of Wolters Kluwer International Group. During a series of podcasts, we'll bring you insightful analysis, commentary, and discussion from thought leaders and experts on current topics in the field of international arbitration, IP law, international tax law, competition law, and other international legal fields.
Hello, welcome to this podcast. My name is Gertie Schouten. I'm a journalist and legal blogger. And some of you may know the posts I've been writing for many years as Kluwer Patent Blogger. Among others, about the Unified Patent Court, which is the subject of today's podcast. The court opened its doors in June. The first orders and decisions have been published, and annotated case law is available on Kluwer IP Law in the new UPC Case Law Tracker. Today, I will be talking to Johanna Flüdström. She is a Helsinki-based partner of law firm Rocher and specialized in intellectual property and technology. Also, she's working on a book titled Enforcement of UPC Decisions, a Survey of the Participating Member States. It will be published later this year. Welcome, Johanna.
Thank you, and thank you for the invitation. Happy to be here to talk about the UPC.
You've been following developments around the UPC for years. What's your first impression now that it has started? Is it a success?
Yes, I think we can call it a success. I think the first impressions are very positive. The start of the UPC has been and is a very special time for all the patent enthusiasts in Europe. I think there was a lot of anticipation building up before the launch of the UPC. After all the years and years of preparation and after all the delays. So there is really a lot of excitement in the air on how everything will be developing.
You're quite enthusiastic. Still, it turned out that over 500,000 patents and patent applications were opted out from the UPC's jurisdiction. Why do you think that is?
I think the question of opt-out was something that was very carefully considered by the patent holders before the start of the sunrise period and well before that. There was a lot of debate and different considerations with the users and the patent holders on how to approach this new system. The patent holders, many of them did very careful analysis of their portfolios before deciding on what to do. In terms of your question of the reasons for someone to opt out or not, I think on one hand, there have been those who have felt that the UPC reform has been long overdue. And this group of patent holders feel that they want to be in the front line in developing the new court system and impacting the course this new court will take by filing cases and participating in the system. So in essence, they feel that they want to be part of developing the new system. And then on the other hand, we have another group of patent holders who have wanted to take a more cautious approach. They want to see how the new system develops before deciding on whether to play the UPC game or not. I think there are, and I've been talking with many patent holders over the past months on these decisions, and I think there are probably equally many reasons for taking a cautious approach than there are for those who have decided to opt out. I think perhaps one of the main reasons for opting out has been the same than what has sparked others to use the UPC system. So the fact that the system is new brings with it uncertainty. For some, it's possibility. For some, it is a risk. So the ones who have opted out have probably pondered the questions on how will the new system function? Will the Europe-wide practices merge? Or will the system perhaps be led by views from individual jurisdictions? We still have open all the very fundamental questions on how the UPC provisions will be interpreted and implemented. And I think all these questions together are the ones that all the patent holders have had to think about. And then some have, on that balance of risk and reward, then decided on to opt out. So I think those are the reasons. And I think many of those who have opted out they are still very carefully looking at the system, how it develops, and then will later decide whether they want to withdraw their opt-outs and participate in the system.
You already mentioned the fundamentals of the court, the way it has been created as a reason for some people to opt out of the court. Do you expect the way the court was created and its compatibility with EU law to be tested soon?
I think that is one of the fundamental questions relating to the UPC that may be tested. On when that question will be tested, it may be soon or it may take more time. On the other fundamental questions, I think we have kind of two categories of other types of fundamental questions. The one that you mentioned really relates to the formation of the UPC, but then we have the questions or all the questions relating to application of the very basic concepts of patent law in this new system that are obviously fundamental to the functioning of the court. And these, I think, will be tested in the UPC very soon. So we have questions on the very basic concepts, on the doctrines that have existed in all the jurisdictions already before, but in different variations. And already at this point, we see from the early cases or here through the grapevine that we will be seeing the new European practice being formed on how the court will approach all these basic questions, like questions on assumptions on patent validity, criteria for granting preliminary injunctions, from questions like the likelihood of infringement required for the grant of the PI to balance of convenience and urgency. And then in addition to sort of these basic patent law fundamentals, we will be facing very fundamental questions also relating to procedural aspects, taking on evidence, role of expert witnesses, and such questions. And then the second category of fundamental basic questions are the questions relating to the competence and jurisdiction of the UPC, questions on concrete jurisdictions between UPC and the national courts, jurisdictional questions relating to non-UPC, EPC jurisdictions, and so forth. So I think these are questions that are evidently being tested in the early phases of the new court.
Interesting times for you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think this is very exciting time for the European patent litigation landscape. And it has been very interesting to see that there's a lot of active cases being filed across Europe. And I think this is also a reflection on the trust that has been placed on the new system by the early adopters as the first users of the new system. And that also, I think, contributes to the success of the system.
Are there any specific sectors where the new system seems to be very popular or unpopular?
So this is a very interesting question. And when we talk about the UPC and the reform, we, of course, need to talk about both the court system and then the reform on the European patents, namely European patents with unitary effect. And before the start of the UPC, I think in terms of technology fields, it was expected that perhaps the life sciences field might be slightly more hesitant in adopting the new system, just because of the role of individual patents in those businesses. However, if we look at the statistics in terms of patents that have been requested to have the unitary effect, the statistics actually show that life sciences field is one of the most active in opting for having the unitary effect for the new European patents. On the other hand, the digital technology field seems to have adopted a slightly more conservative approach to seeking unitary protection for the new European patents. Statistically, in the digital technology field, it's only about one-tenth of the European patents that have been now opted to obtain unitary effect. So that's on the patent side. But then when we look at the court cases, we actually see that the cases that now have been filed before the UPC during the first months represent a very broad range of technology fields. There are many in the digital technology field, and even a number of SEP cases have been filed recently. So it is popular with a broad range of technology fields, but perhaps in different aspects of the new system.
Have you filed any cases with the UPC yourself?
Yes, I have had the chance to do that as well. Very, very good time for a patent litigator to experience that. In our case, we are in very early phases. So the stories on hearings and the details of how everything went, we'll have to wait for later. But it has been very exciting to have the chance to experience firsthand at this early stage the new system, and to see how the cases develop in the new setup. I think what has been very interesting and what can be seen is the different legal traditions across Europe coming together, and very fundamental questions of patent law being argued in different directions. It's not just argumentation of factual points on legal theories that have been tested many times in national courts, but really also on the fundamental points on legal argumentation, how the rules should be interpreted, what the legal standards should be in this new court and in this new regime. So personally, it will be very interesting to see how the UPC practice will be developed following by the arguments presented by the parties in these early cases.
Now, you talk about the legal aspects as a lawyer, very logically. Now, over the last months, there have been many problems, however, with the practical side of the UPC. The content management system didn't work so well, which wasn't such good news for a system which works digitally most of the time. You have to file a document electronically. Many things go online. Did you have any problems with filing documents, or do you think the system is working all right now?
Well, what you describe is a correct description of how the case management system has been working. And in terms of the actual filing, I must say that it was an adventure of its own in navigating the electronic filing system. At the end, got the case filed, and there were many challenges in that, but how I have felt is that there is also a lot of cooperation by the different parties in managing the situation in the best possible way. So for those who don't know, so the case management system is really the centralized IT system for managing all the cases within the UPC, and it applies both to the opt-outs, withdrawals of the opt-outs, as well as the case filings and communications coming from the court. And it is, of course, very challenging if and when the system is working. There were issues before the launch of the UPC with the filing of the opt-outs. There were issues during the first days of the UPC where cases had to be filed in hard copies, and there were literally races to get to the court to file the hard copy, and it has been a bit of a playoff and counting of minutes on who got to the court first. So I think there are still challenges. I'm very hopeful and positive that these will be fixed. I see the progress all the time in that respect as well, but I think it's also a focus area that needs to be acknowledged by everyone for the future development and functioning of the system.
The first statistics clearly show the German central and local divisions of the UPC are dominant in the new system. Is that a problem in your view, or is this positive?
I would not say that it's a problem. I think it's a good thing, and I think it is something that many assume to happen. Germany has been one of the leading patent litigation jurisdictions in Europe for a long time. So the German activity level in the UPC was also something very expected. I think actually that to the contrary, it would have been likely a great disappointment for the entire system if in the early phases of the UPC German cases would have been absent. There are also lots and lots of extremely skilled German patent professionals, both in the judiciary and in the attorney side. So for the development of the new system, it is good to see that there is a lot of activity in the German divisions and that skillful arguments are being presented by the experienced specialist litigators for assessment by experienced judges in the early phases. And although I have not had the chance to be present in the hearings held thus far, the feedback that I have heard indicates that irrespective of the presiding judge and their nationality, the panels of judges have been very active throughout. So the nationality of the division or the judges should not be decisive. In this respect, I also think it is very interesting and welcome to see that it's not just the German divisions that have received the cases, but actually that cases have been filed during the first couple of months in many other divisions as well. So I think the Vienna division in Austria has cases, Paris, France, Helsinki, Finland, Milan, Italy, The Hague, and the Nordic-Baltic division in Stockholm, to mention some.
When can we expect the first important decisions of the UPC, do you think?
So as we are recording this, we are in a stage where the first oral hearings have been held, and a number of first hearings in different local divisions are being scheduled. There is still some challenges in the transparency of the case documentation, but based on the insights and reports available to the public, I think there are many very interesting questions being raised already in the first cases. And overall, I think that during this fall, we will see very many fundamental questions being decided and tested.
Can you mention some of the cases?
Yes. So I think there are many cases that involve questions relating to precautionary measures. And those involve questions, the very sort of fundamental questions on presumptions of validity, the level required to prove infringement. And then we have also interesting questions on jurisdictions and competence. So very fundamental and basic questions for the development of the new system.
Now the UPC is starting with all these new developments, but what does this mean for the position of national IP courts? Do they still have a role to play?
For the near future, I would not expect major changes for the national courts, as I believe that the national courts and UPC will be used in parallel. In the longer term, the impact of the UPC on the national courts will depend on the development of the UPC practice to a large degree, I believe. I think the more UPC practice there will be and the more comfort the users will get on the use of the new system, the more prominent role the UPC will have. However, I think the same questions will continue to be important for the users of the systems when they decide in which forums they will bring their cases. So I think legal certainty and speediness of the proceedings will be important both for the success of the UPC and for the success of the national courts.
One particular point which was discussed a lot in the years before the launch of the UPC was the position of the small and medium enterprises and the costs of the new court, where these would be far too high for the SMEs, has been argued. What's your view on this issue?
I think that that's a very important question and something that needs to be considered going forward. I think the cost question relating to patent litigation is relevant both in national contexts and then before the UPC. Whether the cost of the UPC will be too high as to as to create an obstacle for actually filing cases before the UPC, I think depends very much on the case specifics. So for an SME or for any user of the system, if the option would be, or the alternative would be, to file individual cases in multiple jurisdictions across Europe, then UPC will likely be cost effective. However, if the case actually involves only one jurisdiction or one or two jurisdictions, then perhaps the national courts will provide the more affordable option for the SME. But I think overall this is something that needs to be sort of followed up and considered as the UPC practice develops and we see how the proceedings are run and what kind of costs are involved.
What does the UPC mean for the legal profession?
I think that's a very good question. And I think the UPC for the European IP professionals has been a very much awaited reform. A lot of focus has been put on learning the new system, preparing for its start. And there has been a lot of positive buzz around the first cases filed, experts following up very closely on what is happening, who is filing, and where. And what has been really positive in my view, also from the perspective of the development of the system for the future, is that there is really a sharing of experiences and following closely on what is happening in the different divisions. It seems that all the users, the judges, and the attorneys alike all want to see how the new system works and ensure for their part that it has a good start. So I think this is something that also influences or what the legal profession will get out of this new system. It's definitely a learning journey for everyone, and it has been very positive to see the shared interest in getting the system work and sharing the experiences and ensuring that the new system that is being developed will really be integrating different European views on patent litigation. If we look at sort of the practical impact and sort of how the cases are being run and who is participating in these cases from the legal profession, it has been very interesting to see that many users have opted to use cross-jurisdictional multinational litigation teams for the first UPC filings. It is not only for, if you will, the major patent litigation jurisdiction attorneys who would be running the cases, but there are really multinational cross-jurisdictional teams. And I think this also supports the development of the new system into becoming a true European-wide system. I think perhaps one of the reasons why the users have opted to use this multinational, multi-jurisdictional teams is to ensure that in the first cases, the litigation teams will also be presenting arguments from different legal traditions for the court to consider as the court is formulating the new practice. So I think it is positive development for the legal profession, for the legal professionals working in the field of patents. And I think this sort of pan-European approach is also very good for the development of the new court for its users to ensure that it actually becomes a pan-European patent system that takes the best out of the national systems and make the UPC the best patent system there is.
Do you expect law firms will start to cooperate more intensively or even merge in the upcoming years?
Yes, I think there was already before the first intended start of the UPC or expected start of the UPC, we saw some mergers or closer corporations with law firms working actively in this field in order to build sort of perhaps alliances with the thought of then having a broader representation for the clients. And as said, we see the multi-jurisdictional teams working together. So I think there are a lot of opportunities for the legal professionals and the law firms also in this respect.
Is it a pity that the UK isn't in?
I personally, I think it is a pity. I would have wanted definitely to see UK in the UPC for very many reasons. We do see, and what has been visible in the market is that some UK firms specializing in patent litigation have opened their offices in Ireland and are also participating in the now filed UPC cases. So it's a pity that UK is not involved, but I'm very happy to see colleagues, skilled colleagues, also from the UK participating in the UPC in different roles.
Thank you. My final question, you've been working on a book about the execution of decisions of the Unified Patent Court. Is there anything you can share with us already about the book?
Well, thank you. Thank you for asking and bringing up the book. So we have a book coming up on enforcement of UPC decisions in the member states. And this is something that we have been co-editing with Christoph Augustin. The background for this book is that obviously UPC is targeted to provide a centralized system for litigating the patents. And at the end of the UPC proceedings, the order issued must be enforced against the non-complying party. And these UPC orders are directly enforceable in the member states. However, the enforcement is conducted by the national enforcement authorities and to a large degree in accordance with the national enforcement proceedings. So in our book, we cover the national enforcement proceedings for enforcing UPC orders for majority of the UPC jurisdictions. The book covers different jurisdictions chapter by chapter, and we've had the privilege of working with over 20 patent litigation experts around Europe who have contributed to the book. So, yeah, very excited to have the book now in print and for publication then later this fall.
Thanks. I'm looking forward to reading it. Johanna, thank you so much for this interesting interview and the success with the final phase of your book. So this concludes our podcast. You've been listening to Johanna Vluedström of law firm Rocher in Wolters Kluwer's podcast series about international law. Her book will be available next month. As I told in my introduction, Kluwer Law International has started with publishing annotated UPC decisions and orders in the newly launched UPC Case Law Tracker. Experts from the field give their opinion on the UPC cases and how they differ from existing courts. The UPC Case Law Tracker is now live. My name is Gertie Schouten. Have a wonderful day. Thank you for listening.
Stay informed. Subscribe to this podcast. Visit kluwerlaw.com or follow us on social media.